Welcome to the Turkey Hunter Podcast, the original all turkey, all the time podcast with your co-hosts Andy Galliano and Cameron Weddington.
In our weekly podcast, we're going to bring you some wild turkey calling tips like this.
From there, we're going to go into she's aggravated. There's another hen that's challenged her, or she's challenging another hen. She's going to cut an excited yelp.
Advice from old pro turkey hunters like this.
The turkeys typically don't like, I think, more times than not, to travel in an easterly direction into the sun first thing in the morning, especially after he gets up. It's a blinding thing. It's just like you. It's hard for you to see into the sun. Mm-hmm. So if I have a choice, I'm going to try to make it so that I'm going to be on the west side in the morning, east side in the afternoon of a turkey.
Exciting live hunts like this.
Holy crap, they're coming. Holy cow.
Then we're going to teach you how to cook your bird with advice such as this.
With some fresh rosemary and garlic, and then cool that off and spread that along the inside of that butterflied turkey breast that we've seasoned on both sides.
Wildlife management tips for your property, especially with turkeys like this.
If you look at the type of habitats that turkeys need for nesting and brooding, that tends to be habitat that can be managed more successfully with growing season fire than with dormant season fire.
And hopefully along the way, we'll get plenty of these.
Well, on November the 28th of 1953, I was hatched. When I popped out of my mom and the baby doctor spanked me on the bottom, I went, oh, and I've been doing it ever since.
I like that.
Thank you for tuning in, and now for this week's show. Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Turkey Hunter Podcast. You are listening to episode number 478, The Sweet Voice of the Wild Turkey with Denny Gulvis. And I am your co-host and the guy who is two of two things. Number one, hoping to hold on to his voice because of all the pollen in the air. And number two, having a pretty darn fun turkey season so far, even though he's had to skip the past 2 days.
Ooh, those are always brutal. Mm-hmm. I'm your co-host, and I'm the guy who thought he had been raptured to heaven this morning.
We spoke about that a little bit when you called me to make sure that you'd not been raptured.
Yes. So, Andy's my failsafe. If I call him and he's still here, that means I'm still here.
If you call me and you don't get me, that means you're gone.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still here on, or I should say, in hell on earth.
Yes, absolutely. That's the gauge for sure. But no, I agree with your point too, man. I'm turkey hunting without a gun right now, but I am turkey hunting, and this morning just was perfect. I was near a cypress slough, which is kind of my favorite down in the swamp, called up 2.5 big long beards. The third one, I think it's another gobbler with beard rot personally, but it could be a jake. It just would be a weird thing to have a fully gobbling jake with two long beards and a hen, but it could be, you know. I guess. But anyway, yelped him up to 20 yards, came across in front of me, like one of the coolest scenes I've ever seen. The first gobbler pitched over the water. The second gobbler just hops in and wades across, like half his beard is in the water. I mean, I've seen them walk across water with just their legs, but I've never seen them like up over his feathers and everything.
Yeah.
Wades across, gets over there, shakes off. I mean, this is all at 25 yards. And then the hen flies over there. And then The hen ends up slipping off on him, which got him in desperation mode. And the boss gobbler used, this area had been select cut, so there's a lot of tops laying around. Yep. And the boss gobbler used a fallen tree log that was left, walked up it, got 7 feet in the air probably, to where he was above all the thick select cut tops. I mean, he's just like a beacon up there. And just started freaking hammering and strutting. And I mean, I'm not one to count gobbles, but it had to be, I mean, he was gobbling at least, I would say, 10 times plus a minute.
Well,
for an hour and a half. So that's what, 90, 100 gobbles? I don't know. It was a ridiculous. I mean, he should have felt bad about it. He gobbled so much.
Mm.
And so if there's a turkey in Tennessee that's gobbled out, it's that one. He's gobbled out. But anyway, it was an unbelievable experience. I had wood ducks and blue-winged teal and hooded mcgansers swimming around and squealing, and he'd gobble at them. And it just, I was like, I mean, this is it. This, you know, you boys get to heaven after me, and you're wondering where I am. If there's a part of it that looks like what I just described, I'll be there, sitting against a white oak next to the ducks and the turkeys gobbling.
That's pretty cool.
It was really neat, man. It was really neat. So good stuff. Good stuff. It sounds like you've been experiencing something similar.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't had a whole lot of gobbling going on. I've been dealing with some henned up turkeys, but I did have some success last week and got some turkey meat in the freezer. And yeah, on Alabama's opener, I got to watch a longbeard walk within about, I'd say, 40 to 45 steps from me. And I didn't shoot him, or shoot at him is probably the better way to say it. You know, the wind was blowing about 167.2 miles an hour. And maybe there was a bunch of gobbling going on, but I seriously doubt it. There is a serious front about to move through that day. And so I just managed to get in the area where all the hens were, and he had roosted away from them.
Ooh, good combo.
Yeah, no doubt. And so he came strolling through there, and I said, you know, it's opening day. He's not gobbling. He's not strutting. He's not drumming. He's just walking where he left pearls yesterday. And, you know, I killed one last week that was a great hunt. And I'm not saying everybody has to do this. And if I was telling this story 10 years ago, I'd be saying, yep, I whacked one. But I just chose not to take a shot. You know, he's still breeding. And here's the thing. The only reason I would have killed that turkey is to say that I'd killed that turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone goes in that area and kills that turkey and it's not me, then I'm perfectly okay with that. It's like letting a buck walk. You know, you let one walk, and if your neighbor shoots him, then you got to be okay with it. And I decided if he got to breed for another day or 2 days or maybe 10 days, who knows, then no harm, no foul. The next time I go in there, if he comes gobbling and strutting in, he will ride home with me.
Absolutely.
Just a choice I made. I'm not saying anybody has to hunt the way that I hunted that morning, and I'm not saying that I'll do it again the same way next week or tomorrow. I'm just saying that's what I did on Monday, the opener. So
yeah, I think we both kind of share that sentiment, especially with the home state. I feel like we've discussed that before, where kind of the rules are a little different when you're going somewhere every day, you know. And I'm with you, man. I mean, it's just like, if he just happens to stroll by and you don't get that heart pounding gobbles and drums and stuff, it's almost like, what's the point in killing him? You have a chance at least that in a week, tomorrow, who knows, you get this insane experience with that same turkey.
Yeah.
And he might come in ripping it, drumming at 5 steps behind you and come around and you end up killing him. And what a memory that'll be, you know, compared to, yeah, he strolled by on a windy day and I just happened to be sitting in the right spot and could have whacked him.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. For me, I think we kind of share that sentiment, but it's not for everybody. You know, a lot of people want to be hashtag tagged out as quickly as possible, and that's what they want to do. So that's fine. But
that's right.
I'm with you on that. You know, my brother has a similar rule for his elk hunting. You know, I was asking him, like, well, what size one are you after? You know, he said, if my adrenaline is pumping through my veins when that animal walks up to me, he's getting it. If not, pass. Yeah. And I think that's a great rule, honestly, for turkey hunting even, because I've had plenty of turkeys come in within range that I was just like, I'm not feeling it. Like, this turkey's just no coloration. He's just pecking the ground. Like, you know, wow, I'm not even going to hardly remember this. Why shoot it?
Yeah.
And if I was starving, yeah, I mean, I'd kill every one of them. I'd be shooting hens and everything if I was starving to death, but I'm not. So anyway.
And, you know, what you said is 100% true. If that had happened in a state where I'd not killed. I would have tagged that bird and just been as grateful and thankful for a day in the woods and for the sacrifice that that turkey made. But, you know, it's a choice I made. And, hey, you know, maybe some six-year-old little kid goes out there and whacks that bird, or some 85-year-old man goes out there and whacks that bird, and that's his last hunt he ever gets to go on.
Yep.
I'll never know, but maybe. So,
well, and you can sleep securely tonight. You know where one is.
I do.
I mean, which
I think I do.
Hey, that's a pretty good feeling, I gotta say, when you know, you at least you're confident you think you could go where one is.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, that's good stuff, man. We both had some cool experiences so far, no doubt.
Yeah. Oh, and then in that same morning after the gobbler came strolling by, where he went walking to, I called. And this hen comes running as fast as I have ever seen a turkey run, and dang near steamrolled me.
That's crazy.
Just slammed on the brakes at about 10 feet and was like, whoa, wait a minute.
That wasn't there.
And that's not a hen.
That is crazy.
That was kind of cool. I'd never, you know, I don't think I've ever literally been charged by a turkey like that.
That's wild. That's
a different story altogether. But, you know, just sitting there calling as she came, I'm telling you, I thought it was a deer running towards me when I first heard it.
That is wild.
Yeah, it was that fast and that noisy. But anyway, so that was kind of cool. So far, so good. You know, I can't complain about anything. And, you know, good Lord willing, there's always tomorrow or Friday and then a few more days in the season. And maybe I'll be kicking my rear end on the last day of Alabama season saying, you know, I'm going to go 0-for in Alabama. Wish I'd killed that bird, but I don't believe that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen. And even if you do, I bet, honestly, you still have plenty of turkey to eat on and life will go on.
Indeed. So,
good stuff, man.
Turkey talk and being around and just surrounded by hens and all that, we have somebody joining us today that not only gets to do that, what'd he say, about 300 days out of the year?
Yeah.
But has the vast majority of it video recorded and has audio recordings of all that turkey talk as well. And so we have the living, breathing encyclopedia of wild turkey talk joining us today. And that is Denny Elvis. And
I don't say this lightly. In my opinion, which is one man's opinion, this guy knows and has been around and has heard more turkeys for more hours, minutes than anyone else on this earth right now. If what he says about his habits is true, and I believe him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just telling you, I think that's a fact. So probably worth listening to what he says.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And he says plenty. So we're going to have a two-part episode. And Andy and I have a few words mixed in, but mostly it's Denny. Which is good. That's how we want our guests to be.
Yeah.
So we'll have him for 2 weeks in a row here. But we got two pretty long episodes with Denny. So before we hop in there, real quick, A, check out the show notes. Sign up for Patreon. We would really appreciate your support on Patreon. You're going to get bonus content. You're going to get discount for our merch store, which is also linked in the show notes. And we have Zoom Hangouts, Book of the Month. We're doing a lot of cool stuff in there. Hopefully just going to grow that as we get more people. It will become more and more fun the more people we get in there, in my opinion.
Great.
So go check that out. Go buy some turkey calls for the turkey season if yours hasn't started yet. The Turkey Hunter Podcast Turkey Calls are getting very high praise from the reviews I've seen. I've yet to see a negative review. So make sure you check those out. A lot of folks are enjoying those already. You don't want to be at a disadvantage in the woods this season. You want to be using the best turkey call. So make sure you grab some of those. And then lastly, I want to pull the favor of the week forward.
All right.
We got Easter coming up this Sunday. I want to ask for the favor of the week. Make sure you get to you and your family in church, even if you know it's turkey season, your turkey season may be open. Probably should take a day off, get with the family, enjoy some family time in church. And that's going to be my favor of the week this week. Make sure you do that. Get the kids, if you have any, in church. You need to get right with the Lord. Make sure you're serving him daily. Praise him for what he did for us on the cross this weekend.
I don't know how to say it any better than that. So that's awesome. That's a great favor of the week. And, you know, you nailed that last part perfectly. So I'm going to just go back and comment on something you said about the calls.
Okay.
And I'm going to say this. I had a long bearded turkey fall all over himself to get where I was sitting running one of those calls. I'm not saying that that's never happened before. Then I dang near got run over, steamrolled by a hen running one of our diaphragm calls. And I'm starting to think that I might actually sound like a real turkey in the woods. So
good feeling. And hey, you heard my experience this morning. What do you think I'm toting around? And then I've had a little success myself the past couple weeks.
Yeah, you've done pretty.
And the reports are good. I'm batting the highest batting average I've ever had during turkey season at this point. So is it the calls? I don't know that it is. Are they hurting anything? Absolutely not. So it may be worth checking out, guys. I don't, you know, we may have to pull these back down. If my average stays where it is for the full season, I'm not going to be selling any more of these.
We'll buy out our own supply.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to buy the rights to this call forever. Oh, man, that's awesome. Yeah, it's been really good. I don't know. They sound darn good. If you want to hear a sound file, they're on the website. If you go to my Instagram, which I'm not on right now, but it's still live, you can see one of the videos where it's kind of me in sunglasses leaning down in front of it is the cover image. You can listen to the Batwing on that. That was me running that. So if you want to check them out, do that. So far, they're drawing some blood in the Southeast.
Yeah, they're solid and getting great reviews from people who have bought them. So I'm glad to hear that. You know, we worked hard to pick the right calls and work with our call maker to get them the way that we wanted them to sound. And it's turned out really well. So anyway,
let's talk to Denny.
Yeah, speaking of those sounds, let's get in and talk to the man that knows all about them.
All right. See you guys on the other side.
Hey, everybody. Cameron and I are glad to tell you we have on the line with us today the one and only Denny Gulvis. And Denny is a legend in the turkey hunting world to the point that he's got videos out there. There's some audio. There's turkey calls, Gulvis-style calls. And he's a Grand National turkey calling champion. My goodness, I don't think there's much that Denny hasn't done. And, you know, I'm going to cut his audio off when I say this so that he doesn't hear me bragging on him so much. But Denny's become so much of a student of the wild turkey that he's traded in the shotgun for a video camera full time, all the time. And so we're just tickled to have Denny on here. And sir, how are you today?
Thank you, Cameron and Andy. I certainly appreciate the fantastic comments, even though the legend deal I'm not really comfortable with. When you're ever dealing with wild turkeys, and the more that I've been doing it for so many years, the more that you do it, you find out how really you don't really know what you think you might know. Yeah. They have that ability to make a fool out of you. And that's one of the things, whenever you're dealing with any kind of an animal, no matter what it is, you know, you might say, well, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. Well, about the time you say that, next thing you know, they're going to be doing something else. So And especially with a wild turkey, and we'll talk about that later too as we go on. You know, the unpredictable nature of the thing of the bird is what keeps us going. I mean, that's what keeps it so exciting. But
absolutely,
I certainly appreciate the opportunity to come here today and share some of my ideas and experiences. And it's great to be with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking forward to this. And for anybody listening, we had Denny on back in episode 379. And we covered a lot of kind of his background and history, you know, and why he is where he is. But quick synopsis, he, as Andy said, he's traded the gun in. So then he just films and listens to audio and records audio of turkeys. I mean, pretty much year round, it sounds like, isn't it, Denny? Like 9, 10 months out of the year, at least?
Just about every day. I'm either, if I'm not recording in the woods or filming in the woods, I'm usually at the computer editing and doing, picking back the stuff that I did for the last 9, 10 months. But I usually start filming, like I'm filming right now, and we're doing this in February, but I started right around Christmas. It's weather dependent somewhat too. And I go from like Christmas till around the 4th of July, towards the end of July when it gets really hot out, then it's really difficult. And then I kind of usually shut it down and start to work with my editing and up for maybe a month or so. And then I'm right back at it again in the fall if I'm not archery hunting. But the turkeys, it's just, you know, it's been my life. I mean, I just, and like everyone out there that's listening today, I mean, everybody knows how addictive it is. But one of the big, you know, you mentioned about filming and hunting. It was kind of a funny story about that. You know, a lot of guys say, oh, you don't hunt anymore. No, I do hunt. It's exactly the same thing everybody else does, but only I hunt with a camera. And for me, the camera is the greatest thing that I've ever picked up. It's not for everybody by far, but I've learned through the many, many years. I started filming back in 1983. And for me, it's the greatest decision I've made, because one of the biggest things, it gives me the opportunity to be in the woods more. And that's kind of like where it all come about. When I hunted with a shotgun, you know, ever since I started hunting 12 years old. And then up until around 1981, 82, I was still shooting with a shotgun, or trying to anyhow. But when I'd come home after a, you know, a successful day, I can remember one day, and I'll never forget this day. I mean, I've told this story many times. When I come home, it was great to have a gobbler. But I told my wife, I said, wow, you know, here we are in the first week of the season, whatever it might have been. And I said, I got the whole season ahead of me. And I, you know, what am I going to do? And I said, well, you know, we'll see here. I said, it would be nice to be able to film, because I kind of grew up with a camera a little bit. My dad was into cameras back then. It was Super 8 or whatever it was. You know, he used to have to go out and develop the film, and he used to take family pictures. And I was doing still photography at the time, too, you know, with a 35-millimeter camera and just all around filming. And I was filming some turkeys, too. I mean, not filming, but taking pictures of them, still photos. So I told my wife, boy, it'd be nice if I could just, you know, go out and, you know, maybe film them. So, and, you know, I just had this young kid. I think my twins were only maybe a year old at the time or something like that. And so it was kind of, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of money. So I scraped up as much as I could, and I went out and bought a decent video camera. And it was exciting. I mean, I couldn't wait. And I started going out and filming, trying to film gobblers just like I did, you know, any other hunt before. But, you know, day after day, I was having gobblers come in, but, you know, they were 35, 40 yards away, and geez, I just couldn't get them any closer. And because at that time, all the way up until that time, you know, the shot was usually made at that time, and the turkey was harvested, and, you know, you really didn't have to know how to get them closer pretty much, you know. But it was frustrating. I mean, those first couple of months of filming like that, or, you know, at least a half a year of filming, I had a rough time, and I got some nice, pretty decent stuff. But I remember coming home one day after a really frustrating day when the gobblers are going around me at 40 yards, 45 yards, and with a cameraman, and everybody out there who knows that does any filming, the closer to you can get the subject, the better than the, you know, the quality of the video or photo might it is. But I come home frustrated one day, and I told my wife, I said, you know, I said, if I could only tell those turkeys that I'll never hurt them again if they would just let me take their picture. I'll never hurt another one. I'll never take a shot again. And she just, I can remember this. And she kind of looked at me and rolled her eyes, because she knew I was kind of nuts about this anyhow. And she says, I think you're losing your mind. She says, what are you saying? And I says, well, man, if I could, you know, if I could just let me be part of the woods or whatever. I'm not a human. Just let me be part of that world. Let me be one of them, you know, and I'll never hurt them again. And, you know, the most craziest thing was, and this is an absolute true story, from that day on, I went out filming day after day. And it was almost like somebody flipped the switch. I mean, I was having gobblers come in 20 yards, 15 yards, 12 yards, strutting around me and everything. I mean, it was like, wow, amazing. I still, it was almost like they heard me. And that was back in 1984. I think it was in 84. And from that day on, I've never taken another shotgun. And, you know, I have nothing against killing turkeys by far. My son's killed turkeys, my wife, all of it. You know, there's nothing, absolutely nothing against it. But the camera for me has afforded me opportunities like I would have never, ever had I been looking down the barrel of a gun. Because, you know, when you're hunting with a gun or a bow or whatever it might be, your focus is on actually taking the shot and killing the bird or whatever it might be. And but with your camera, you know, I'm worried about what the bird's doing, how to get them here, whatever to do it, and how to keep them in focus, the lighting and all that stuff. But the biggest thing was when you come home from a successful hunt or a successful filming adventure, I could bring it back up on the screen again and see and relive the whole thing again. Yeah. I mean, wow. And, you know, the other thing is, it's like a catch and release, because I'll bet everyone will agree with me this. I mean, especially if you've worked with a certain gobbler over years, couple of years or whatever, you know, and then when you finally win the game and you take the gobbler, wouldn't you like to be able to go up and breathe life back into him again and let him go and meet him another day? Well, what I'm doing, I can do that. I mean, I can, with filming, I can do that. It's exactly the same thing. I do the exact techniques of a regular gun hunter or bow hunt. But the camera, I can go back and see things that I never, or hear things that I would have never, ever picked up. You know, I did seminars for years. And what I did a video assisted seminar where I would talk about different techniques and different calling things. And then what the biggest draw was, it is we had a big screen behind me. And back when I first started, it was really funny. I used to have television set up around the room, which is back then, you know, when I first started doing seminars, they didn't have big screen TV. I mean, big screens, and they couldn't project. They didn't have big projectors, you know, where I could project video onto the screen. So I had to use televisions. And I kind of shudder when I think back of that, because you had to rely on those little screens. But, you know, nobody complained about it, because what was nice about that, because, you know, when you're talking to people or an audience or whatever, you usually lose them after a few minutes. But, you know, when I would explain a certain calling technique or whatever it is, we were able to go out into the field and watch it being done on the turkeys and watch the turkeys' reactions. And how many times that when I was done with the show, I'd have guys come up to me and they would pick things out in the videos that really I didn't even notice. I mean, that was so cool, because, and that just goes to show you how many little things are going on out there. But when you're focused looking down a gun or through a bow sight or whatever it might be, you know, you're focused on one thing, and that's killing the bird and taking the bird. But there's a lot going on out there between that, you know, and, you know, there's nothing, that's what you have to do though, when you're on an actual hunt with a bow. But with a camera, I mean, I've been able to learn so much more. And the other big advantage is it's open season, 365 days a year. I can do it any single day of the year all the time. I mean, how cool is that? That's actually the reason I took it up, because I just couldn't get enough of it. You know, I mean, when you're out, and we're all, I'm sure I'm speaking for everyone that's listening right now. You know, you know how it is. Once it gets in your blood and you can't get enough of this stuff. And,
so that's private land access may be a little easier too, with just a camera.
Well, you know, that's another thing too. That has helped me a lot, you know, especially with, and we'll talk about these roof scenes and the hens, because I'm really into hens now. But it does, you know, when I try to get on someone a property or whatever, I ask permission or whatever, you know, and I tell them, and it's the truth. I don't, you know, I'm never going to hurt turkeys. I'll never hurt them at all. All I'm going to do, all I want to do is just film them and study them, especially their voices, the hens' voices. I've been really, really into the hens I've always, and I'm sure there are a lot of guys the same. For me, the hens are everything. It's like with deer hunting in a rut or so, the does pretty much dictate everything. With turkey, the hens pretty much dictate everything on how the hunt might go. And that's why. But even when I was younger, when I first heard my first turkey call and the first hunt that I was ever on with my dad, and I'll never forget that day. I remember the exact same spot. Actually, I was just there a couple of weeks ago driving by there, and I pointed it out to my wife, and I told my wife, I took my first turkey up there, and I remember every single thing about that. And I was 12, 13, I'm 68 years old now. I was 12 or 13 years old at that time, you know, and I remember every part of it. My dad using that box call, bringing those young gobblers in, and we were able to take them, both of us were able to take that young gobbler. And I mean, like, it was, wow. He was, you know, he was scratching on that Lynch box call, that old Lynch box call, and to be able to talk an animal in. I mean, wow, what's more exciting than that? You know, I mean, that's one of the biggest draws too about turkeys. I mean, I'm sure, because there's nothing like the ability to be able to talk to a wild animal and actually talk to it and say things that convinces it that you're one of them. I mean,
yeah, that's it.
You know, deer or whatever, but with turkeys, the turkeys talk back. Deer somewhat talk back too in some ways, but you know, with turkeys, they, you know, once you get, the more you get into it and the more you learn, and that's why I'm obsessed with this, the voices. I mean, I can't get enough of it. You know, you'd think after all these years, that's one thing my wife will say all the time, don't you ever, or I talk to guys that I used to be in calling contests years ago that kind of dropped out of it, you know, and right now, to be honest with you, I'm into it 100 times more than I ever was when I was ever in turkey calling contests back in the early, late 70s and 80s. I mean, I just can't get enough of this every day. It's, you know, every morning, it's like I'm like a kid at Christmas getting up.
Yeah, I guess. And we have talked to several calling contest participants like Matt Van Sice or Chad Claycomb, who we've recorded with. I'm not sure those episodes will be coming if they haven't been played by the time we play this one, but both of them mentioned that they send sound files to you, and me and you had a discussion yesterday pre-podcast. We were talking, and it's pretty interesting because you, in my mind, there is no one, and this is, I would be shocked if this isn't accurate. There is probably no one on this earth who is living right now that has as much wild hen turkey audio as you do. And so they send themselves calling to you, and you actually overlay that with real hens?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and as we talked yesterday, and that overlay for me, and I just started this probably maybe 4 years ago or so, because I've got a really, really good computer system here. And, you know, I have to have that with all this, the turkey videos and the audio that I have. And so the opportunity today to be able to do things are amazing. But I found out, you know, you could call, like I could call for you and ask your opinion, or you could call for me and I'll give you maybe, you know, my opinion or so. But basically, you could do that to 40 different people and you're going to get 40 different opinions. You know, I mean, everybody has a different opinion on what a call sounds like. And if you're really at the razor edge to this, if you really like, I want to get to the point where I sound like a turkey to someone who knows what turkeys sound like, especially the turkeys. But to someone who really knows turkeys, that whenever I call, no matter what it is, that yes, that's it. There's no mistake. If I heard that anywhere, no matter if it was 6 inches away or, you know, 50 yards away, that's a turkey. And that's my goal. I mean, you know, and Bob Potash, the guy that I mentored, I mean, was my mentor years and years and years ago when I first started, you know, who I learned to make turkey calls from, who I learned in his pen, lived in his pen until I got my own, you know, listening to turkeys and studying their voices. And we went back and forth, you know, on how to make the calls. But, you know, the big thing was we studied the birds, and one thing he told me, he said, remember, Galvis, and before he passed away, you know, one of the things he told me, he said, remember, Galvis, he said, you don't want to become satisfied ever. You know, he says, and I looked at him, you know, I'm just a young kid, you know, I said, what do you mean? He goes, if you become satisfied with what you're doing on your calling, he says, next thing you're going to be doing, I can guarantee you're going to be going golfing or something, because once you become satisfied, that goal isn't there anymore. That edge to be the best or whatever, try to, you know, your goal is achieved. And but the crazy thing about this is I've been doing it for nearly 50 years. And I mean, religiously for 50 years, and I still am never satisfied. And that's, I guess that's a good thing. I would like to get to that point, you know, somewhat, but in the back of my head, I keep hearing him say that. So, but yeah, I've got a lot of audio, and the overlays, let me explain a little bit. What I was getting at is, like, when you ask someone's opinion or you get opinion from different people, everybody has just a different opinion. But I found that the greatest way or the greatest tool or gauge to decipher if you're calling or how good you're calling or how much close to a turkey you are is by doing these overlays. Now, let me explain what the overlay is. I've got over at least 3,000 to 4,000 hens on recorded in my library, at least that, maybe more. I mean, you can imagine I film all these days and all these, I've got so many different birds on audio. So what I'll do is that I'll have someone do a segment for me, make a calling segment, the best that they could do it. And I want it usually done at close range too. Most guys, and you'll see this today, I mean, I see it on Facebook all the time. You'll see a guy get a call and he'll put a call in his car, no matter what it is, a box call, a pot call, mouth call, and then he's right up to the camera talking on the phone or whatever, and they're talking to the, you know, the audience on Facebook, and then he'll say, well, okay, I'm going to do the call. And then next thing I know, he's walking away, and he walks 40 yards or 30, 40 yards down through the woods and turns away from you and starts calling him. And I always think, where are you going? Where are you going? What are you trying to hide? You know, if you want to, if you think you're a turkey, you're doing, you know, because a real turkey, this is so important, you know, and this is something I just recently, I mean, really, really thought about. A real turkey sounds like a real turkey. If a hen jumps up on my knee, she sounds like a real hen no matter what. If she's, you know, matter if she's 10 feet away from me or 12 feet, 50 yards or 8 inches from me, she still sounds like a wild turkey. You know, there's no, and if there's people that know what turkeys sound like who really, really spend time with them, there's a difference. I mean, you can tell. And that's the thing. That's the thing that intrigues me so much. They have a unique characteristic, what I call a voice characteristic, and the way they lay their calls out, the way that they speak like you and I speak. And it's huge. And so what I suggest when they do a, you know, anybody that does one of these segments for an overlay, I tell them to get as close as they can to a microphone, a good microphone if they can. Most everybody today is using a phone, and get as close as you can to a good phone microphone, and then call as you normally would, like pretending you're a turkey, and lay down a series of cuts and yelps or whatever it is. And then when they send it to me, as soon as I hear it and listen to it, it takes me to, because I have so many hens that I've heard and listened to and studied, it takes me to certain hens that I think maybe that might be similar to what they're doing. So I don't do it just with one hen. I'll do it with five, six, whatever they want. I'll just put it to a number of hens, because a lot of guys will say, well, I don't want to sound just like one hen. No. Every hen sounds a little bit different, like people. They all have little different voices, but they all have that voice characteristic, you know. And so when I hear that calling segment that they send to me, I'll get into my computer system. And what's really neat is that I can see audio. That's what's cool. You can see audio. So when you can see audio, it's different, you know, somewhat different. It's an addition to actually hearing it. So I've got programs where I could actually lay that person's calling segment. And then I could bring, well, what I usually do is I'll start with either way, I'll start with a real turkey starting to call or yelp or whatever she's doing. And then all of a sudden I'll bring the caller's call right in after it. And then all of a sudden goes back to a turkey again, then right in with a guy. And there's really an art to this, and it takes time to do it the right way. Because if you think about it, if you take a real turkey call, and then all of a sudden you got the caller calling, there's going to be spaces there, which is going to kind of mess your mind up when you hear it. And you're going to hear, you know, so what I do is that I'll lay out the whole line. If you can imagine this, a line of audio of the real turkey, and there's background sound there. You know, whenever the turkey stops yelping or cutting, there's background sound there. It might be for 3 or 4 seconds, and I could cut that out and make it in one long string so that that background sound, or the natural background sound of the turkey, is always going to be there. Now, if I cut it off, you know what I mean? You're going to hear a choppy type of sound, but this way I can bring it all together. And then I'll bring the caller's sounds right in on top of that. And that's the true gauge. And it's really interesting. I mean, it's fantastic. When I first started doing it, I thought, wow, this is fantastic. And I do it all the time with my own calling. It's really, really neat. And what's really funny about it, though, you know, I've done it for a lot of people, some of the best callers in the world, turkey contest callers, and it's interesting because a lot of guys, they're really, really hyped up about it. Some of them, you know, a few of them, really hyped up and can't wait. So, man, I got the best segment. This call is doing exactly what I want to do. And so I run it against five different hens. And then all of a sudden I wait and 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 I never hear back from them. It's almost like, where'd you go?
Didn't sound quite like the hens like they thought.
Apparently, but you know, and the other thing is I don't ever give the opinion. I usually try not to give any of my opinion. As I said, I don't want to give you my opinion because it don't mean much. You know, I mean, really, whatever's right there it is, you know. And then when you listen to it, do what you think you have to do to get close as you can to that. And then what I liked is I wish, you know, whenever I do these segments, if they have a specific hand or hens in mind, send it to me, or at least tell me which one it is, because I probably have it anyhow, because I've recorded probably every hen audio that was ever done on YouTube or Facebook. I've recorded all the hens, no doubt about it. So I pretty much know them all. I actually know them by heart anymore. Hard to believe you could know 3,000 different hens, but the only thing I can remember, I can't remember what I just did with my keys, it was 10 minutes ago, but I can remember hens, almost every single hen I've ever heard in 45 years, which is nuts. My wife just laughs at me about that, but kind of a, yes, I am a little bit mental. Actually, I kind of worry about that. You know, I start thinking, get into this stuff so much, you start to wonder if this really is maybe something mental. You know, maybe I should go see a shrink or something over this.
Don't do that. All three of us go.
the overlays are just, they're an incredible tool. And I welcome, you know, anybody's interested in it. I'll help along as much as they can, you know, and there's no better gauge as far as I'm concerned. If you think about it, it's common sense. You know, you want to be like a turkey, you put your call right up against. You can't, you ask 50 guys, they're going to give you 50 different opinions. And what does that tell you? Not a whole lot, really.
That's true. That's very true. And if anybody listening to this has any sway with the Grand National judging, I think you should have Denny Gulvis there with an overlay on the calling and then judge that with real hens. Just saying. That'd be amazing.
Well, that's a good point, because unfortunately, like we already touched on it, everybody has a different opinion. You know what I mean? And you wonder, not everybody really, really is into this. You know, if you think about it, there's not very many people that are really into this year round all the time, or especially turkey sounds, you know. And I talked to guys that were putting on the biggest contests for many years, and I said the best thing to do is to get out there and find Farmer Joe or Farmer Frank or whatever it might be, someone who raises turkeys or whatever, and have them be the judge. You know, and they always told me, well, how could we do that? You know, you can't do that. Well, today with social media and everything, I think you could find – could probably find people that we don't know that are out there, you know. But again, just because a farmer raises a turkey or whatever it is doesn't mean he's really listening to all the sounds from the cackles, the fly down cackles, the cuts, and you know, every call that's asked for in a calling contest are some of the most popular calls, I guess I would say. But that to me would be that, like, if I got out of calling contest back in 1982 and 83, I think that's when I left calling contest and I got into filming then only. You know, I always said, I think if I knew that I could get into a calling contest where I would have seven judges there that really, really knew turkeys, that really, really knew exactly what they sound or however, I might enter a contest again just to see, you know. But I don't think it's ever going to happen. I mean, and you can't really sway anybody for it, you know, because like I said earlier, you know, not everybody does this is consumed about it. You've got to be consumed about it, because I found out, and this is really interesting, and I'm sure everybody will agree with this, I do this every single day. I listen to turkeys every single day. And if I would go one day without listening to turkey sounds or calling or segments that I have, you lose that edge. You lose that edge. You see, when I'm in the woods now, even like when I was out this morning, I have a little MP3 player with me. Some of you are probably familiar with it. It's a little thing no bigger than a matchbook. I've got 280 different hens on that MP3 player. And I have two sets of earbuds. I've got full earbuds with left and right, and I also have an earbud with single ear. So throughout the morning or throughout the day when I'm out there filming, I will stop, sit down on a log, and I will put either the both head earbuds in or pick the one with just a single one and play. I'll look the area over, because what's going on before I make any calls, a lot of times I'll just sit right down and think, what would a hen do right now? Or what would I think would be natural to this situation? And then I'll just go through some of the hens that I have quickly with an MP3 player, and I can only let them play for maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And just by letting them play in my ear, it gets me right there again. It gets me right back again, because you lose that. You know, we really don't have any control over that. And I'll give you an example. I've said this many times, but, you know, like you're riding home from work and you have the radio playing and you hear a song, you know, a popular song, and that song gets on your head and you just like, wow, all night long, you can't forget that song. You can't get it out of your head. We've all done that before. But next morning you get up, or maybe 2 days from now, you try to remember what that song was, and until you hear it again, you can't get the notes exactly. You know, it's almost like the rhythm's not there as much, you know. But boy, when you hear it, boom, you're back into it again. The same exact, that's just the way our mind works, our hearing works, you know. And I found that out, and you know, I could listen to all day to turkeys, and then when I get up the next morning, until I hear them again or hear something, and it doesn't even matter what the turkey's doing. I mean, it just like puts you right back into that again, you know. I mean, and so people say, well, you don't have to be that good. And you're right. You're exactly right. You don't have to be. I mean, anybody, I could go out in the woods in the middle of the spring on a hot gobbler, and I could take out a piece of a slate or whatever, anything. I could pick up a rock or whatever. We all done it, and scratch some notes out or something that even resembles any kind, or squeal with a blade of grass. We've done it before, you know, I mean, and call turkeys in. You don't always have to be, you know, in a gobbler in the spring, you know what he's looking for. And a lot of times they're just all hyped up, cross-eyed and whatever it is. And they'll run into a lot of them, not all of them, but some of them will run into any sound that resembles, you know, a hen turkey. You know, we'd probably be the same way if we only done it once a year. So that's, you know, but the big thing is, though, all the years of studying these birds and their voices, especially hens. As I said, you know, I'm not into gobblers as much as I used to. I filmed gobblers for so many years, and I've got so many gobblers on film, and, you know, but when I turn to hens and studying the hens, man, it's just a whole new world, you know, because like I said, they pretty much dictate everything. And the other thing is like us, you know, their language, they're saying something. They don't, you know, a lot of hunters, when you go out there and you know, you try to get a turkey to answer, or you answer the turkey with a call, you're not really thinking about what you're really doing there. You know, you're just making a call and hoping for an answer or listening for an answer, but that's not what they're doing. When they say something or when they talk, they're saying something. I mean, they're actually saying something. If a turkey went through the woods just making all kinds of sounds like we do, they'd be all dead because, you know, I mean, there's so many predators out there, and they know that voice can get them in trouble. So whenever they open their mouth, you know, there's a possibility that they might die. I mean, they've learned that from day one, ever since they've been a peep. So because there's so many predators anymore that they that's how they live. And so their voice can get them in trouble. So I've learned, and especially from really intense study through the films and having the opportunity to be close to so many turkeys for so many years, that they're speaking to each other. I mean, and that's the thing, like when I'm talking to you, I'm changing my voice, I'm changing my dialect, I'm changing my pitches and everything because I'm trying to emphasize certain things. Now, if I would talk to you like this, everybody would be turning it off right away. And that's basically what the average turkey caller does today. I mean, he'll just get out a box call or a slate call or diaphragm call, and he'll probably make that normal, what I call walking up the step yelp. Yelp, 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 yelp. No, 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 no. We all hear it in the woods. Every time the guy, you know, that's one of the things that really sets a guy, a human off, compared to a turkey. Does almost exactly the same thing over and over. But when you listen to real turkeys, real hens talking, or even gobblers, whatever, they're sporadic. I mean, but that's sporadic. There's meanings in that sporadic. You know, they're saying different things. And the way that they put their sounds together with pitch changes and everything like that, they're saying things like, there's ways that turkeys cluck. Everybody thinks, well, cluck's a generalized call. No, it isn't. There's a lot of clucks. I mean, you got what I call happy clucks. You got searching clucks. Where are you type clucks? Looking clucks. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And then you got your perks, your warning perks. And there's different kind of warning notes out there too. The turkeys do. You know, the main warning they have is look out, everybody. And that's, you know, that's like if me and you were somewhere in an area where there might be danger on it. If we were standing together and I went, look out, everybody, you'd be ducking right away. You'd jump away. Well, that's the big bunk that turkeys do, that bunk, bunk, bunk. Everybody's ready to go, you know, but they've got other sounds. They've got other parts that are like, uh-oh, what's that? You know, or I think I see something. And each one, in all that, there's little sound qualities in that part or in that cluck. And turkeys recognize it. You can do certain clucks at some turkeys. You could have 5 or 6, 8, 10 different hens out in front of you. And if you do a happy cluck the right way, none of them lift their head. But if you step it up in intensity just a hair more, and just, you know, it's almost like every one of their hands will come up. Their heads will come up and looking around. They know that something's up. So that, I mean, so you can see there just in the clucks, they have so many different clucks that they have or different things. The fly down cackles, you got fly down cackles, fly up cackles, and how you portray every one of them, the turkeys recognize them because that's their language. You know, what I do, in the last 24 years, I've been doing these roost segments. You've probably heard about them maybe. And a lot of my audio is some of this roost segments. And because back when I first started way back 24 years ago, climbing under the, what I do is to explain it to you, try to get out early in the morning in the dark, an hour, 2 hours before I expect a turkey to be flying out of the roost. Try to find a turkey in the roost. Try to sneak in like a mouse in a church. You can't make one sound at all because turkeys don't sleep a sound you think they do. I mean, they're aware somewhat. They're sleeping, but they're aware of anything going on around below them too. They have to be. But it's really difficult. People don't realize how difficult until you really start doing this because you're walking around in the dark. I actually probably think I've walked in 24 years. I've walked more in the dark than I do in the daytime anymore. And looking up in the trees to where the turkeys might be, and you see the blob in the tree. And then once you get, then it's an absolutely, it's intense to try to get as close as you can to them because the closer you are, the better the audio is going to be for sure, and the video as well once it gets lighter out. But and getting in close is really, really rough. I mean, it's hard because if you break one stick or one branch or whatever it might be, automatically that puts every turkey in that area that's roosting on the limb, that puts them on alarm, like, uh-oh, something's under there. Could be a deer, could be a raccoon, could be anything, but they're aware of it. And if you do it more than one time, then I found out in all the years of doing this that turkeys seem to see like we can in the dark, pretty close to like what we can in the dark. So unless it's a complete dark of the moon period, which is only a couple of days of the month, you know, they can see your form down there. So you got to be very, very careful about that. And I talked to you yesterday, Cameron, about this. I just did a roost scene here on Friday. I got a really, really good roost segment. Lasted 50-some minutes, some of the best audio that you could ever imagine. But I knew it was going to be tough getting in there. And to give you an example of how hard it is, when I got within 50 yards where I knew that these turkeys were roosting, I actually took a walking stick with me. And I'm going to give you a reason why I did that, because I found out over the years, see, one thing that turkeys recognize human is they recognize our upright form. That's the big thing. I mean, they recognize that. That's their number one enemy for sure, you know, our upright form. So if you go try to sneak under the turkeys and being in a, you know, they're up in a tree 35, 40 feet, whatever, and they're looking down, they see differently than we do, because if I'm looking up at them, I see that the sky is up there. So even though you might think the sky is really pitch black, you usually can see a little bit of the sky up there, be it stars or whatever it is, and clouds, or you can start to see their, you know, you can see their form. But when they're looking down, they can't see quite as good, but they can still pick out, if you got to watch, you know, the background, you know, maybe you got into a grassy area or leafy, lighter leaf area, beech leaves or whatever it might be on the ground, and you walk with that in that upright form, they pick up that outright form, that upright form, bang, one of them gives out that uh-oh, look out warning, you know, and as soon as you hear that, it's like, oh, it's like a sickening thing in your throat, like, or in your stomach, like, oh no, because if more than one starts to do that and they see you, you just change that whole situation. So what I have found, the technique that I use now, and it's just kind of like common sense, I think, I try to make myself look like a deer. So I actually bend over like a deer and try to walk, bend over when I get really close to where the turkeys are. And you got to go as slow as you can. I try not to use a light if I don't have to. If I have to use a light, I have a really, really, really small one just aimed right at my feet where my next step's going to be. And I have my hand cupped over it. So it just gives me a quick fraction of a second of a little bit of light so I don't step on a stick. But what I was doing, like I said, Friday, what I did, and I don't do this too often, I just started doing this. I started taking a walking stick, because when I get all that camera equipment and microphone equipment and everything, you try walking, bending over slowly like that, and you know, you're done for 3 days with your back. You know, I mean, you can't even walk after that. So, but the walking stick is nice, because I can bend right over. That walking stick helps me balance when I'm bent over like that. So, and in that day, like last Friday, I was able to get right underneath them, and it worked out perfectly. So that's just one thing you learn. But the reason I like the audio segments, I mean, the roost segments, is the sounds that come out of those roost segments, when those turkeys first start waking up, you know, you've got what we call the tree call, or I always like to call it the wake-up call. It's those first sounds of the turkey in a group that they talk. It's a kind of like an under breath. You can hardly hear it. They don't even open their mouth. I've watched so many turkeys do it, you know, as much as I could see them up there. They don't even open their mouth. It's like an in-throat. And it's just, you could barely hear it, barely hear it. But all that is, that wake-up call. It's just letting everybody know that we're still here, we're all here. And then as the time goes on and the minutes start to go on, and every group's different, they somewhat get more and more intense. You know, next thing you got this hen talking to that hen, and this hen talking to that hen, or this hen talking to that gobbler. But that's the point. What's nice about these roost segments is that it's actual conversations. It's conversations between birds. Now, think about this. How many YouTube videos do you see out there where you actually have bird-to-bird conversations? Most of the segments out there, whenever, you know, if anybody is studying hens, most of those segments are hens are tense for whatever reason. You know, they might be lost, which is great. They're excited, they're anxious, or whatever it is when they're coming to a caller. They're almost always coming to a caller or a hunter or whatever, you know. But, you know, how many times do you ever have that opportunity to actually hear turkeys talking to other turkeys? I mean, that's what I always want to learn from. I mean, the way this hen... You know, a lot of these audio segments I have, there's 5, 10 different 15 hens talking back and forth, and guys say, it's just a bunch of mumbo jumbo. Like, what do I learn from that? But if you learn to listen closely, you start to pick up. You can hear this hen over here talking to that hen over there, or the way this hen answers that gobbler over there, or whatever it might be. You learn to pick up that, because they are speaking back and forth to each other. So this roost, that's why I put so much merit in that, because, I mean, I've learned a lot You know, but you got to remember they do this all, you know, throughout every day. So common sense tells me that, wow, that's the kind of talk that I want to learn on how they do it, you know. So
let me ask you this, Denny. If you were going to try to call up a gobbler in the spring, would you call on the roost? Because some people are like vehemently against roost calling.
That's a great question. Good point. That's a great question. It depends a lot on how much do you know the gobbler, how much time have you spent with that particular gobbler, what the area is like, is it public areas that have been hunted, whatever it might be. You know, a lot of this comes from experience too. You know, you try to tell, you can't, there's no single answer to every question for sure, but I kind of like play the situation out. I try to figure out, well, what I want to do, I always try and keep everything as natural as possible. Now, remember, I already just mentioned to you, from all these years, the first sound that turkeys make when they wake up is the wake-up call. A lot of guys call it the treat call, but I like to call it the wake-up call because a lot of times I've heard turkeys up in the tree calling, they're yelping real loudly. Well, that's a treat call. No, it isn't. When you think wake-up call, that's the call, the first notes, the first sounds they make. So usually I can just do that, especially even on a gobbler who's really been hunted or really know, you know, I just want to let him know with just some of the right, but you got to do it the right way. This work practice, what listening to turkeys and practicing as much as you can to do it the right way, you know, because if you get too intense on it or too loud, it's automatically a gobbler like, whoa, that's like, nah, that's not, no. He's heard that before, you know what I mean? And he's had bad experiences when he hears something like that. So you learn how to do that wake-up call, which is, to me, is one of the most important calls that you should learn. You know, it was interesting. A few years ago, I was listening on Facebook, and there was a lot of talk going on. It was talking about the tree call. You know, someone, people, you know, one of the number of guys are saying, well, I hear turkey talking in a tree all the time. So, you know, what the heck? What's the difference? And that kind of bothered me because I was thinking, you know, hey, you see, we got a whole different, our world has changed a lot in turkey hunting because a lot of guys now are, you know, they're sitting in blinds and they've got five best looking decoys out there and, you know, sitting in there on their phones, whatever. And I got thinking, it was kind of saddened me because I thought, wow, here's one of the best callers in a calling contest world saying that, you know, he really didn't know what the tree call really was and what it was about, you know, and that's sad to me because, you know, that's what worries me about the way our turkey hunting has been changed. I mean, it's changing and it's evolving in different ways, but you know, turkey hunting it's basically an art, you know, there's a lot of art forms in there, you know, from locating, there's an art to locating the turkey. I've talked about this in my DVD, my challenging DVD, and some of my other DVDs also DVD, but you know, you've got how to locate, how to set up, how to call, how to read about turkey's language. All those are all art forms, you know, and I'm afraid that if, you know, If we think that turkey hunting is just going out and setting a blind in the middle of the field and putting out decoys, we're going to lose that fun part, you know, that makes it so interesting, you know, because there's a lot going on out there in turkey hunting, and I don't ever want to see that go away. So when I heard him say something about, you know, I realized, wow, you know, some of these people maybe don't even know what the tree call is. Well, you remember way back, you might, maybe some of you don't, I'm older now, but I remember reading, you know, the old timers would talk about the tree call, you know, how important a tree call was because, you know, that's it. You know, I mean, that's the first sound that the turkey does. The only way you learn that is you learn through trial and error, you know, through experience. And that tree call can be a very important call. So in answer to your question, that might be what I started out with, just to see how every gobbler reacts to it. And that's the key to every situation when you get into a gobbler hunt. You know, how a gobbler reacts to it, you know, and, you know, you can't really tell people this or tell someone who isn't really experienced about it, you know, and experience, as I've always said, is the best teacher, and it takes a lot of time, but, you know, every situation is different. We learn to read it, you know, And that's why, like I said about the basic things with turkey hunting, you know, you got your locating, you know, today I don't see many guys, and I got, you know, like I said, I go out every day for months and months. And I don't see anybody out locating anymore, hardly at all. And it's really, it's unfortunate, I guess. You know, I can remember back in the 70s and stuff. Let me give you a little funny story about that. See, back in the 70s, early 70s, when I was with Bob Potash, the guy that I talked about earlier, you know, back then we didn't have many turkeys here in Pennsylvania. I mean, we had a few, but it was always hush mouth. Everybody was hush mouth back then. You know, nobody, you know, these guys, these older turkeys, turkey hunters, they took everything they knew to their grave. I mean, nobody would say anything, and you you could ask somebody stuff and they just look at you like, give you no answer, basically, you know. And so we would, you know, we'd go out, we all, Bob would go one way, I'd go other way, Dave, and, you know, and every once in a while, and he, I'll never forget one day he called me on the phone, and I answered the phone off the wall. Back then we had phones on the wall, and I answered the phone, and he goes, hey, how's it going? And I says, all right. And he's whispering. I'm thinking, what's up? What's up? He goes, who's there with you? I said, Karen, my wife. Why? What's going on? He says, he said, I was out on well 69 today, he says, and I seen a gobbler track. He says, I scratched it out. He says, make sure nobody sees it. But he says, keep that one under your hat. He goes, and that's, you know, that's so cool because that's the way it was. You know what I mean? Look at that day, like, geez, you know, we've got turkeys now. We got a lot, and we're fortunate to have a lot of turkeys, even though the population is down in a lot of areas. But I remember those days, you know, to give you an example on how people didn't want to say anything. I'll never forget one day, Bob and I were, we were driving down an old road, and there was a lot of gas wells in this area, and there was a lot of gas company workers, guys, well tenders and things like that. And we were driving down the road, and Bob was kind of a smart aleck a little bit. You know, he always played jokes on everybody all the time. I mean, his main thing was playing jokes, and he even did it with me, and him and I were good friends. And I'll never forget this. And there I am, you know, just a young kid, what, 18, 19 years old or whatever, you know, and we were driving down the road. We come up to this shed, and it was a gas shed, like, I guess, where the, you know, the gas tenders or whatever, the well tenders would meet during lunch. And there was like six trucks parked out there, you know, and he said to me, there, he said, there, we're going to find some information. He always said, let's get some information. He called, let's get information. So he says, you go in, he says, and ask them guys, he says, if they've all, anybody's been seeing or hearing any turkeys, you know. And he stayed in a truck. He said, you go in and do it. So I'll never forget this. I walked up to the door, and I opened up the door and walked in this little shed. And it's a little, you know, maybe 30 by 20, 20 shed there. And there was seven guys sitting in there, all were standing around the wall there, eating their lunch. Not one of them said a word when I walked in. And I looked at them, and they're all looking at me like, and I had camouflage on, and they knew right away. And I says, anybody hearing any turkeys or seeing any turkeys? And not one guy made a sound, not one guy made anything. And I'm thinking, whoa, what is going on here? And I said, well, I just thought maybe I'd ask you guys, you know, because I'm out looking for turkeys and that's whatever. And I, and nobody did say a word. No, and maybe one guy in the back said, no, nah, not really. We haven't seen too much. I, you know, maybe last week I seen one cross the road or something. And when I walked back out of that vehicle, and I mean, I walked out of that building, and I walked over, and I was looking at the truck, and I'm looking at Bob, and there he is giggling with a smile from ear to ear, because he knew exactly what was going to happen there. So that's the way it was back then, you know. And today you got everybody, you know, want to share. Even when I made my first video, Bob was still he was still alive, God love him. And, you know, when I made my first video, he was kind of mad about it because I was sharing some different ideas and different things that I've learned and we learned, you know, together. And when I put that video out, like, he wasn't very, very happy about it at all, you know. So things have changed. It's a good thing. I mean, it's a great thing today, you know, that we got everybody, you know. Naturally, I don't tell everything that I've learned, you know. There's a lot of things you kind of hold under your hat. You learn that, you know, but, you know, because like in calling, for instance, calling, you know, years ago, you know, you only had so many different devices back then, and calls, like I said earlier, their calling devices have come a long, long ways, you know, in from the early years in the 60s and the 70s, whatever it is. But today, you know, you got so many, everybody and their brother and sister and uncle, whatever, there's so many different call manufacturers and all kinds of different things going on. And it's so different than what it was back then. Back then you had maybe a book to read once in a while. You know, you're lucky if you had a book, or there was a cassette tape that somebody had, you know. I remember Ben Lee, you know, he had a couple. I would sit here when I was making turkey calls, and I would play that cassette tape over and over and over again, you know, listening. And whenever there was a hen in there, I would play it back, listen to that hen, you know. And then I raised my own wild turkeys too, which was really an experience. I could spend all day here talking about that because of some of the things I learned with the young birds, because, oh my gosh, through the turkeys, when you have the opportunity to sit with turkeys like that, when you raise them, really pay attention, close attention to them, wow, it's invaluable. You know, it's the same kind of thing I'm doing now, like when I'm with these roost segments, and I do these roost segments a couple different ways, because some of these roost segments, the turkeys don't talk, and I've been finding this out too, a couple, for whatever reason, I don't know, but a lot of the hens and turkeys, when I get into roost anymore, for the last several years, I've been coming out of the roost a lot earlier than what they used to. And I'm not really sure what that's about or why. Maybe it's just a trend that might change a little bit. But, boy, some of these turkeys are coming out really, really early in the morning, and it's still almost dark when they hit the ground. So in that type of flock situation, whatever it is, I'd rather be to where they're going to go fly to. And so I've learned to do that now. And, boy, I've got some incredible stuff. I mean, the last several years or whatever, I mean, you can imagine – Imagine having 55 different hens and young gobbers and gobbers 20 yards, 5 yards, 10 yards from you, talking for an hour and 10 minutes, nonstop talking. I mean, for somebody who studies turkey language, that's like a dream come true. And I've been so fortunate to be able to hit those situations or get in those situations. There's been a lot of effort. There's a lot goes into that, though. You know, you've got to put the effort into it because, and you go day after day and night after night or whatever, you know. But whenever you do get them, whenever it does come about, it's fantastic. I mean, it's such a learning tool, learning experience.
Yeah.
You know, people, a lot of guys will say, you know, we all talk about, especially, you know, you dictate this. You hear it all the time. Guys say, well, you got to listen to real turkeys. You got to listen to real turkeys, you know. But, you know, there's a lot of guys will say they listen to turkeys or they – yeah, I'm listening to turkeys all around, but the biggest thing I found out is a lot of guys really don't hear what they're listening to. You know, just because you have turkeys playing, I touched on this earlier, just because you have turkeys playing in the background or whatever it might be, doesn't mean that you're really hearing on what they're saying. You know, you really got to listen closely to those little pitch changes, those little inflections on how they're speaking back and forth, you know, and you got to get that in your head. You got to remember that as much as possible. So when you're listening to turkeys, listen closely, you know. Anytime a turkey, you know, when a turkey, when you're out in the woods calling gobblers, whatever it is, a lot of guys kind of discount hens. Yeah, I had it. How many times? And I used to say this in my seminars all the time. You know, you'll talk to a guy. Yeah, I called a hen in, but I didn't do any gobblers today. Not a very good day. I'm saying, whoa, wait a minute. Tell me about the hen. What was she doing? I want to, was she calling loud? Was she cutting? Was she yelping? I want to hear about it. You know, I still do that today all the time. You know, what was she doing? Was she raspy? Was she, what was the pitch like? Was, you know, most of them say, I don't know. She was yelping, I guess. I clocking or something, you know. But, oh, geez, the best best lesson was right there and you didn't listen. But like I said earlier, not everybody is really, really into it, you know, like that. But, you know.
Do you call in the spring specifically? Do you call like yourself or are you mostly just there as an observer?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm talking all the time, calling all the time. I try to keep everything. And if you watch my Challenging Pressure Gobblers, I touched on this, you know, the secret to being a good turkey, there's a couple different things, but one of the biggest things is you want to keep everything as natural as possible, you know, and I talked about turkeys and natural conversations, everything as natural as possible. You know, when you go out in the woods and you stand anywhere, you know, what's bad about what we see today a lot, like with YouTube and Facebook, a lot of guys demonstrating their calls and everything. Most of the guys, you know, probably 85% of the calls that are being demonstrated are really excited, loud, rambunctious calls. I mean, you know, when a guy runs down a bunch of cuts and yelps, and they'll send me these segments like that too. And I'm thinking, if you went out in the woods right now, today, and you went on a ridge, on a quiet ridge, and you started doing that right there, every squirrel, every deer, every animal is going to be running around the street like, whoa, what's going on? You know, I mean, it's like, that's so unnatural. That's not natural to the woods, you know, there are times that's good. That usually comes in a conversation. Maybe a turkey heats up or whatever it is. But, you know, the natural sounds of a turkey or a hen, you know, you've got to remember what you think. What would a real hen do right now? What would a real hen do? In a lot of cases, maybe she's going to do what I call like an asking yelp. Now, a lot of guys say, what do you mean an asking yelp? Are you asking yelp? Like, it's like if I said, hey, Andy, where you at? Okay, you hear all that. You hear that, hey, Andy, where you at? With a hen, she might just lift her head. I try to imagine a hen just lifting her head up and going, yelp. Maybe only 4 yelps. How many guys ever do? You ever hear anybody do 3 or 4 yelps? 2 yelps. Hardly anyone does that and strings together. When these guys send me, a lot of times guys will send me the segments and, you know, they'll send me a segment and there's 27 different yelps in a string. I'm thinking, whoa, you know, I mean, I'm going to have a hard time finding a hen that does 27 yelps or something like that. Where's the 2 and 3 and 4 yelps, natural stuff that the turkeys do throughout the day? That's what you really, really want to learn first. You know, those longer yelps and excited stuff comes a little bit later on. So I kind of play it by ear. I want to do everything as much as natural as possible. I always, always stop and think, what would a hen do right now? You know, even if a gobbler's answering me, when a gobbler asks me, how would the hen maybe answer? What, you know, it's a kind of a feel you get, you know, and again, it gets somewhat experience too. You know, you've got to learn how to do it. You know, we could go on and on different techniques and stuff. Like, you know, how many times when you're going through the woods, and I say this a lot, when you're going through the woods, you know, you just stop somewhere and you just give out a call or you blow a crow call or everybody. How many people really stop? And this is something I've learned. It's so important is that when I stop now, before I make a sound of anything to try to get a turkey to gobble or response, I look the area over. I mean, I'm looking for a setup spot just in case. Just in case a gobbler hits close or whatever it is. And that happens a lot, you know, because most guys will just drop right there, you know, and you know, what good is that? You know, you got to find the best setup spot. So I'll look the area over, look behind me. What's the background? What's it there? I'll find a tree. What? Okay, if a turkey holler's over there or if a gobbler holler's over there, what would that be the best spot there? Or would that be the best spot? Do that before you do anything. You know, common sense tells us we can think things out. Turkeys can't think. You know, they can't really think. People say, oh, turkeys are so smart. They're not smart. They're trying to survive is basically all it is. You know, they rely on instinct, but we have the ability to be able to think. So, you know, kind of slow it down a little bit and think beforehand what would happen, you know. And, boy, that's huge. You know, I talked in my video, there's a lot of different techniques, and one of the techniques I use a lot was, you know, guys are using it today. I see it's called picket spot calling, and it was kind of a thing that I learned from a filmmaker, you know what I mean, from filming, you know, because when you're a filmmaker and you're filming turkeys, and even when you're hunting, looking down a gun barrel, it's nice to be able to watch a turkey come in from a distance or whatever it is. You know, it's nice if they would all come straight on in, but how many times they ever do that? You know, very seldom they ever do that. So this pick a spot technique, and people, I can see guys are using it now a lot in some of the videos and programs, and it's an excellent tool. But to kind of explain it a little bit, this pick a spot calling is kind of like we all know that a turkey can pinpoint sound. They are absolutely amazing. Ben Lee said this years ago, I'll never forget him saying, you could go down and dig a hole in the ground and call on the ground, and I can guarantee you that a turkey's going to come if you quit calling. Turkey's going to come and look down that hole. And I'm telling you, he was not wrong. And he said that 50 years ago. And that's exactly right. They know exactly. And, you know, having the opportunity to spend so much time with turkeys now, living with them, I mean, I've seen this. This is amazing. I mean, from distances that are a quarter of a mile, half a mile away, they could come within feet. They know exactly within feet of where that call come from. It's amazing. So this pick a spot calling, I utilize it almost every situation with a gobbler. And to give you a little idea what it is like, as I said, let's say I was walking out a ridgeline or whatever, and I'm looking all the time where possible setup spots would be. So if I would blow a crow call and down over the hill to my right, a gobbler answers maybe down in the bottom or just on the other side of the hillside or even just below me or whatever it is. Now, most cases, most guys in a situation like that is going to drop right in front of a tree. Well, or right to a tree and start calling turkey in. Well, there's a good chance that when that turkey, if he's down over the hill, you know, the bank maybe goes out, the woods goes out maybe 20, 25 yards or whatever it is, or 15 or whatever the distance is, and he's down below there, you start calling to him, there's not a really good chance you're going to come straight up over. What happens is he gets close to the edge, and he's going to maybe go to the right and go to the left where he can, you know, they're wary. They're going by instincts. They've had bad, a lot of gobblers have had bad experiences, so they want to get a better look they can, a lot of them as they can, so they'll go to the right or maybe go to the left. So to alleviate that, what I'll do, if a gobbler answers me down in that hollow, whatever it is, I'll go on out the ridge, maybe 50 yards, 80 yards, depending on the habitat, whatever it's like. Is it thick or open or whatever it is? I'll go out there 50 to 60, 70 yards, whatever it is. And that from that point, I already have a setup spot in mind behind me. I already have a setup spot from where I might set up my equipment. Okay, so I'll go out 50 or 60 yards on out there. Remember, if he answered a crow call or an owl hooter or whatever it is, a locator call, there's a good chance that he's not going to come anyhow. He's just down over there. You know where he's at. He just relate, you know. Even if I did it with a call, I'll still do it if he answers the call. I'll do it just, that has to take a little bit, it's a little bit quicker. But what I'll do is I'll go to that place out there 50 to 60 yards on out further. And that's the place that I want to begin a conversation to him. And I'll start talking to him like a real hen would do. I'll do the asking yelps. He answers, I'll say, I'm over here, man, hey, you know, and I'll put these little inflections in the call when I talk to him. And if he answers back or whatever, then we get a conversation going. I want to get a conversation going from that spot. And then when I feel comfortable that I have a good conversation and he knows where I'm at, I'll run right away, just go right back up to the setup spot, which is maybe 60, 70 yards, whatever it might be. I'll pick up my setup spot and I'll get all my equipment ready or whatever. And then I just sit tight. And that's the key, because now I've set it up. Now that gobbler knows where the hen is, or at least he thinks he knows where the hen is. That's where his concentration is going to be. That's where he's going to be going to, that place. I'm 50, 60 yards up the other side of the ridge or whatever it is where I can see down to where that place was that I picked my, that setup spot, my calling spot was. I can see better down here, no matter how far it is. And then you got to sit tight. And that's the key in this situation. When you're using the pickup spot, you cannot say another word. Because common sense tells you, if I say something right now or make another call, or if I lose patience and start calling again, all of a sudden I just ruined the whole thing. And now all of a sudden he thinks, well, geez, you worry over there. Now you're going to start doing that. He might go to your right or left or whatever. Now you just blew the whole situation. But when you sit tight like that, you got to remember, patience, let it play out. And when the golfer starts working his way up or whatever it is looking for the hand, it could be 5 minutes. It could be a half hour later. But when he gets in the vicinity of where he thinks that hen should be and he's looking for her and he can't find her, most gobblers, not everyone, but most of them, are going to give out what I call a searching gobble. They're going to gobble one time. Oh, it's what it is. Like, where are you at? I heard you were talking to me. Where'd you go? So now, and usually it's going to be somewhere right there where you just called, because he knows exactly where that call with that hen was. Now, remember now, even if I don't see him right there, now you got the advantage. So now I'm ready to go. I know where I got to bring him now. Now that's when from that point, that's the only time you don't make another sound until he gives out that searching point in that area where you want him to be. And then from that point, I'll just start talking to him. Hey, I'm over here. Whatever it is, you know, I'm up here. Some purrs or whatever it is, some contentment purrs, feeding calls, whatever it is. And now he just thinks, well, there you are up there. You know, just like us, same thing. I liken turkeys to the way our lives are. I like that. I like to do that because they are somewhat similar. You know, I mean, it's like, oh, you went over there. Oh, okay. There you are up there. So, you know, I'll just try to give them a few more things. And then now I just redirect them right up into the position. I got much better film. So that pickup spot calling is, I mean, it's an incredible tool if you do it the right way. I mean,
that's pretty good advice right there. Cause you know, a lot of times too, like you can kind of remove by what you're doing there. Like, if you don't want him to come from a certain direction, you kind of fix that by doing what you just said, because if he, you know, there's too many slopes or thick brush on one side, you don't want him coming from there where you can't get a good shot at him or whatever for hunting purposes, pick a spot, you know where he's going to end up coming from essentially.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of like control the situation to somewhat to your advantage, you know what I mean? And that's huge. That's a big thing because, man, if you just picked out any tree anywhere and start calling them in, you got to remember these gobblers have been around for a while, most of them, you know what I mean? And they know that, you know, they've had maybe some bad experiences. And, you know, when a gobbler's going to come looking for a hen, he isn't going to come. We'd love them all to come straight down the pike. But how many times does that happen? You know, they're going to go to your right, your left or whatever. And you got brush over here. You got, you know, holy geez, next thing you know, oh, no, you got your gun pointing over your left. And there he shows up over to the right or something, you know. But, you know, I've been able to alleviate that with this pick spot calling to an extent. And then, you know, that brings into the next thing, you know, like in my challenging pressure gobblers, I talked about that a lot, you know, ventriloquism calling, where you can actually somewhat control a gobbler's approach in the way that you call. I mean, the way, especially with a diaphragm call, you know, or you're doing throat calling, whatever it might be, you could actually throw your calls left and right and somewhat control a gobbler's approach, because you're taking an advantage of that. Like a ventriloquist, you're taking advantage of that gobbler's ability, or turkey hen's ability, whatever it is, whichever bird you're talking to, of knowing exactly where a sound's coming from. So if I can, you know, if that bird's still out there a little ways and I'm watching his body language as he's moving, you know, if he starts to go to my left and that's not going to be too good for me, I'll just maybe if I can, I'll just turn my head to the right, just slowly turn my head to the right a little bit, and then just throw those calls. I'll pick out, and here's another kind of a key thing to remember. I usually look at a stump or a tree or something, a specific point where I want to throw my calls from. Like I would imagine if I'm over there by that tree over there that's 25 yards to my right or whatever it is, I just kind of imagine I'll just throw the calls over there. Like, you know, it's amazing. It sounds nuts, but it can work. I'm telling you, it can work. It's, you know, how ventriloquists do it. You know, we see it, you know, it's like, wow, that sounds like it's coming from here, but they have, you know, it's an art, you know, they know how to do it. And you can somewhat, I've had gobblers that I've back and forth, you know, left and right on their way in just by doing
it. Yeah.
It's kind of cool. But, you know, you got to be careful with movement and all that stuff. You know, that's the other thing of spending my whole life with turkeys and everything. One of the things I found out is, you know, when a gobbler comes in, you know, that the one thing they're looking for, the first thing that they see is movement. I mean, that's turkeys are, you know, just as, like I said about they have that uncanny ability to know exactly where sound comes from.
Yeah. Ready for part two already.
I know it. I could talk to him for a couple of months and still not learn everything I need to know.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. Like, he just, He knows a lot. And I mean, we cover a lot of topics, not just turkeys, turkey calls and turkey competitions and, you know, all kind of stuff. But I mean, just like my experience this morning, I called up some turkeys. I didn't have a gun and I ended up being in their presence for 2 hours compared to if I'd had a gun, I would have been in their presence for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I've never seen a turkey climb a tree like I saw this morning and strut and all that stuff. And the gobbling, and like I got to see the dynamic. Once the hen exited the picture, I got to hear how that amped things up. Like, you learn so much more without the gun. You just do.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's so much that happens after the point of which you would have shot. So, I mean, heck, same for you this morning. After the gobbler went by, you called up the hen.
Yeah.
A lot more experience after the no shot. So it just... I'm not saying that telling everybody to go put their guns away. I'm saying that from a standpoint of Denny doesn't carry a gun. I can't imagine the amount of audio and video and experiences he's seen because of that.
Right.
So I hope y'all enjoyed that. Listen, I mean, he's going. Denny's fired up about turkeys as anybody you've ever heard. So he's one after another on it. So hopefully, you know, you may need to re-listen to it or whatever, but that's full of great info. I hope y'all enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yep, and part two is just as good, so be sure you come back next week and listen to that. And Cameron gave us the favor of the week in the intro, so what do you think, man? Anything else you need to...
Good luck, hunt safe, wrap it up.
Ditto all that, and thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. We know that you have choices. We appreciate you spending your time with us. We hope you have a wonderful week and a safe one as well, and we look forward to seeing you again next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye. The king is risen.
He is truly risen.
Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to the Turkey Hunter podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please go on over to iTunes and leave a 5-star review. And make sure to head over to www.iamturkeyhunting.com to subscribe for free turkey hunting tips, tactics, strategies, and product reviews to help you have a more successful turkey season. And stay tuned for upcoming episodes on hunting afternoon birds, how to film your hunt, and the breeding cycle of hens, as well as some guest interviews. Thanks again for listening. We know your time is valuable, and we appreciate you sharing some of it with us. See you next week.